name's Dennis, and I'm an alcoholic. In 18 days, I'll have 16 years, and clap for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. When I got here, I was hopeless and I was helpless. I just got through doing 10 and a half years in a federal prison. And, you know, today the way I think of that is, you know, I lost the war. Thank God that war's over. All the tough people I know are either dead or in prison. Thank God I'm not one of them. Thank God for recovery. Thank God for AA and AA for God, because that's why I'm here tonight. And anybody that's last name is alcoholic, I love you. And even the ones that aren't, I love you. So welcome, family. It's kind of scary getting up here. It's been a while since I shared a meeting. But when I got here, I remember I had just gotten out of a federal prison. And I remember my parole officer telling me, I'm going to qualify for the newcomer here and give you my experience. It's a little bit of a war story, then I'll get into my hopes and how recovery's helped me. But I remember getting out of federal prison, and my parole officer come to see me 2 days later, and he told me, Dennis, he says, you realize this will be the first time that you won't have to piss in a bottle. You don't have to report. Since you were 18 years old, and I was 48 years old, you guys, and the first thing that came to my mind, the very first thing came to my mind was, okay, I can do this one. I'll get it right this time. I'll just drink a quart of Old English 500 every day, and I'll be all right. In less than a month and a half, I was getting drunk every day and did a lot of side dishes with that. And I ended up picking up a petty theft. I ended up picking up a DUI. And I was getting ready to run. I knew a lot of people on the East Coast. I met a lot of people while I was in prison, and I was going to run to the East Coast. So I'm driving down Bellevue, and I never drive down Bellevue ever, because cars on Bellevue, and I know better than to do that. So, but I was doing that, and I found myself driving down by Par. And if you want to hear about a divine intervention, that was one of them in my life. I look back at it, I didn't my first year in recovery, but I truly believe that was a divine intervention, and that's one of the main reasons I'm here tonight speaking. Is because of that happened, the way that happened. And there was a fellow that was a director there that became my sponsor. His name's Bob H. And I knew him from my first term in prison. And I was the man to come to, you know, for protection and what to do, who to see, who to run around with. Don't take that wrong, you guys. The only way that anybody can protect themselves in that environment, if anybody's been in prison, is they know, you know, that you have to build a 360-degree wall of hate if you want to leave there. And so that 360-degree wall of hate protected me, and I helped other people that came in that I knew, you know, from my background and my past, and I met him. And over 20 years or maybe 25 years had elapsed. He lapsed since I last seen him. So I'm driving down there, and he's going like this. And I remember reaching my hand out the window and going, I'll be back in a minute. I had enough integrity to do that. So I did, you know, and I remember I was so sick. I stopped at that little store down on the end, down from Park. It's a little grocery store. It's been there for 60 years. Walked in, grabbed two bottles of Thunderbird, and didn't pay for them, and walked out. I think I scared the guy half to death. Walked out. I drank them. Went back by Par, and got out. And Bob asked me, he says, Dennis, what are you doing? And I said, well, you know, Bobby, I said, I picked up a petty theft, and I have a prior that they can prior me back from 1967, which makes it a felony. I already had four. I already had three strikes when the three four. I would have had four strikes when the three strike law came out in 1991, which wasn't retroactive to me because I was already in prison, so it didn't pertain to me. But this time it did. And every enhancement California gives you for a prior felony is 7 years, so that's 28 years right there without a board appearance. So I knew I was done. You know, I had no hope. All I could think about, my mind was just filled with anxiety. You know, just really, I really thought about committing suicide. I was real scared, which I wouldn't have admitted that to nobody. But I can do that in recovery. And, you know, I told him, I said, Bob, you know, there's nothing left to do. He said, well, you know, he said, Dennis, he says, have you ever asked for help in your life? And you know, that hit me like an uppercut. And I knew nothing about AA, and I knew nothing about recovery, and I knew nothing about PAR. I just really thought that he was a lame for staying clean and sober that many years and not seeing him. I really thought something was wrong with him. And so I told him, I said, well, Bob, I said, look, I said, you know, my jacket's that thick. I said, you know, it would astound you if you've seen all the rest. It scares me right now to think back on him standing up here in front of everybody to honestly reflect back on him, how many arrests I've really had. And it's scary. It kind of makes me emotional. But anyhow, I told him, I said, Bob, I'm running back to the East Coast. He says, well, Dennis, he says, are you drinking every day? And I said, yeah. He says, do you have any money? And I said, no. He said, well, I can probably pretty much predict what's going to happen to you. He said, either you're going to kill somebody or somebody's going to kill you. And I said, well, what are you saying? He said, you know what, he said, have you ever thought about, you know, asking for help and going up to detox and having faith? And he said, you know where I've been, you know where I come from. And I said, you know what, Bob, there's no possible way that I'm going to go up to detox and a judge and walk in a courtroom and a judge is going to say, oh, yeah, go ahead and stay in recovery, work your program. And, you know, we'll let you out. Anyhow, he said, there you go, Dennis. He said, there you go. You haven't asked for help. You have no faith. And he said, you know what? Try it our way. And I remember this, you guys. And every time I think about it and every time I see Bob, I kind of tear up because I remember pointing my finger at him like that and saying, all right, you know what? I'm going to do that, but you know what? You're sending me commissary money. Because I know where I'm going. He said, no, you just get your ass up into detox and detox. And lo and behold, you guys, here I am. From that day, here I am. I'll go through what happened. I'll go through all the process of me being scared, all the PTSD I went through while I was going to court, you know, it still attacks me to this very day, you know, and when I get around a lot of people, I get real nervous, you know, I get, my mouth just wants to lie, uninvited, I don't know where it comes from. It just comes from nowhere, you know, and that's what PTSD does to you. It makes you defend yourself. So, you know, recovery's helped me in such a way I can't even begin to tell you, because I know when I do it now. Used to I didn't. It wasn't nothing, but now I do. And as a result of the steps and conditions, a sponsor, coming to meetings, fellowship, and everything I can imagine, my life revolves around recovery today. But anyhow, getting back to what happened in that courtroom, I have never been to court, you guys, ever in my life without waist chains on, ankle chains, and handcuffed. Never, ever. So they talked me into going to court, And, you know, I'm thinking, God, this is stupid. This is real stupid. You know, so one of the staff members take me there, and I remember I had a pack of Marlboros and a lighter. And I get there about 8:30 in the morning. There's prisoners sitting up in the jury box. The courtroom's just buzzing. And right around quarter to four, there's only two of us left in that courtroom. And everything he told me just went out the drain. You know, there's three bailiffs, the judge, me, and the guy that brought me, and one other guy that has to see the judge, and there's, right over here, there's Manila folders. And I wasn't real sure that they had priored me, but I could see the big red letters stamped felony. And there was only two of them laying there, and I knew one was mine. And so, what do? The first thing I think about is getting that pack of cigarettes, going back here and thinking, well, when I get back there in that holding tank, I'll smoke a cigarette. I'll have me a cigarette, because I know that's where I'm going. And then all of a sudden, I heard this little voice. Dennis, try living in faith. I never did that, you guys. That was the hardest decision I've ever made in my life, was that one right there. And I thought, why not? Why not? So I took them back out, put them in my shirt pocket. The judge called me up in front of him, and he said, Mr. Edwin, he says, I hear you're in par. And he says, how do you feel about that? You know how alcoholics are. They love to hear themselves talk. So I'm sitting there, and I'm talking, just telling him how much I like it and what it's doing for me. And you know, he's saying something, but I don't hear him because I'm scared. And, you know, the next thing I hear is, bam! He hits the gavel loud enough to wake me up and stop me from talking. And he says, you're a lard. Lord, my God, oh Lord, that never heard of that in my life. He says, you can go back to par. And he says, you can work that program. And he says, you come back in a month and we'll have a preliminary hearing. And I thought, well, in a month they'll find out who I am. So in a month I come back, and I get in the courtroom, and it's all buzzing, and I hear this lady running around, and she's calling my last name. And I walk up to her, and I said, yeah, you know, my name's Dennis Evelyn. She says, well, could you come back here in chambers? I go, son of a God, there it is. They found out who I was. So, you know, I'm going through the same dilemma. It doesn't quit. The same insanity, it didn't quit. I thought about, okay, you know, I'm looking at this bailiff, and I'm looking over here at this other bailiff, and I'm thinking, well, I can hit this sucker right here. And, you know, I know I can knock that one. I know I can get out of this courtroom, because they found out who I was. And I hear that little voice again. Have you ever thought about living in faith? And so I go back in there, and there's this long table with all these chairs, and I sit down, and she says, well, Mr. Evelyn, you got a 50-50 chance of beating this case. That's just what I didn't want to hear, you know. And she said, or you can sign right here, and we'll give you a misdemeanor. I just made that. Let me sign. And if the judge, I'm just being honest here, you guys. If the judge would have asked me, how much time do you think you deserve, Mr. Evelyn, I would have told him, give me 5 years. I could do 5 years, no problem. Give me five, no problem. That's not what happened, you guys. That's not what happened. What happened was he gave me 120 days in par. He told me, 7 days prior to my release from par, I had to get into a DUI classes and start in them. And I ended up staying there for a year at Par. I went through the DUI classes, completed it, got into college, started college, and to this very day, I'm a certified addiction treatment counselor and have been certified for and credentialed for the last 12 years. So I got to give away what AA gave me. You know, I got to find out how powerless I was over alcohol. I got to find out all the unmanageability areas in my life. I got to find out how really irritable, restless, and discontent I really was. And the reason I bring that up is because before I got into recovery, I would not ever admit to anybody that I was scared. It was like this, you guys. The code that I had to live by was, I'm not scared of nothing. And nobody at 25 feet would talk to me because they knew by the look in my eyes that I would rather kill you than talk to you. And that's how I lived. And that's pretty lonely. That's pretty scary. And, you know, I look back on it, and every time I wound back up in prison because of drinking, you know, it just got worse, and it got worse, and it got worse. And, you know, some of the things that I had to compromise, some of the values, some of the morals, some of the beliefs that I kept compromising and compromising over and over again, and the readings call it pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Well, that's an acronym for I paid and I paid and I paid until I became totally hopeless and did not want to live no more. So when I finally, I remember this too, I'll tell you this story. I remember when I was in Par, you know, I thought my first 6 months, my first year, I knew everything there was to know about the steps. I knew everything there was to know about recovery. And all I was really doing was taking everybody's inventory, including AA's, and, you know, going through it in my head and revising new plans and new ways to work this program. Well, I don't work this program anymore. I get to experience it. And there's a big difference between working it and an experience in it. And actually, to tell you the truth, it took me 4.5 years, and I hope nobody in this room goes through what I went through. And the reason I'm telling you this, it took me 4.5 years to do a fearless and searching moral inventory. I was a 1-2-3-stepper. Up until then, I was scared to death to let anybody know any secrets about my past. You know, and they tell you, and you hear it in all the meetings, that you're only as sick as your secrets. And how true that is. Because you wake up with them, you go to sleep with them, you can pray all you want, they didn't go away from me, let me put it that way. That's why it says we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our arms, and that's what I had to do. And I remember I had, I think it was my 4th birthday, and Bob came to it, and he said, "Well, Dennis, how you doing with your, how you doing with that 4-step? I said, "Oh, I'm doing real good, Bob." You know, so about 6 months went by, and, you know, we're talking. He says, "How you doing? Are you about done with that?" And I'll be honest with you guys, in one sentence, I could have done that 4-step. And he said, "Well, I'll be over this weekend, and we'll do it." And I'm telling you guys, I'll never forget this. I remember what that damn tablet looked like. I remember the pen I was using, and I remember trying my hardest to lie to minimize, you know, my fourth step. And I tried and I tried and I tried and I couldn't do it. So finally I wrote it out. And I just let it go. And he came over, you know, and we did it. And I handed it to him and he handed it back to him. And he said, no. He says, you know, it says we admit it to God, to ourselves, and another human being. And he said, that's what I want you to do. I want you to hear, listen to your words. And so I remember my heart coming up here, and I remember me getting cottonmouth, and I don't remember being that scared ever in my life, okay, and being able to admit it. And so I read it, I got through it, and when I got through, he just kind of looked at me, and he said, Dennis, he says, put somebody that you love more than anybody else in your life in the position you were just in to do a fourth step. How would you feel about them? Just give me one word. And I thought, man, I'd have compassion for that person if they went through that. And he said, there you go, Dennis. Forgive yourself, have compassion, you know, and go on with life. He said, you forgive yourself, go on. Your story doesn't matter. It's not the story that matters. He says, whatever that was, you had to pick it up. You had to look at it. You had to get rid of it. That was your reputation. That's not your reputation no more. You know, you worked step three. Okay, you made a decision. You took God with you, and God won between that pen and that paper. He won, taking with you through the rest of them steps. And you'll never have another problem in your life that you can't work out through them steps. And that made a lot of sense to me, you guys. It made a heck of a lot of sense to me. And so I went on, and, you know, I felt real good. At first, I was real paranoid. Like, you know, is he going to tell somebody? Is he going to judge me now? Is he going to, every time I see him, am I going to feel inferior because I didn't? You know what? None of that happened. Just like the book, big book says, when you're a sponsor and God put us together, that was the second divine intervention. That you have no access to grind. He had no access to grind. I love that man to this very day. And there's nothing that I would be as scared to tell him. You know, I know that he carries God with him just like I get the message through people. My message comes, you know, God comes through you guys. That's why I continue to come to meetings. You know, that's why I continue to, you know, invest my whole life in recovery. That's why I became a counselor, is because this message I give tonight is for those three newcomers. 90% of why I'm up here is for you three newcomers. Because I know how I felt when I came through that door. I know how I felt. I know how angry, I know how hurt, I remember the pain, I remember the hopelessness, and pretty soon I start hearing this message of recovery, and I start hearing all these things that everybody talks about in these meetings that we call defects of character and shortcomings. I get to hear them, and I get to say, you know what? I'm still alcoholic, and I'll break off real quick, and I'll tell you a good one. My lovely wife right there, Lynn, she's been putting up with me now for almost 5 years. May the 13th, it'll be 5 years. And here, I guess it was a month ago. No, it's been more than a month. It's been a month and a half now. I got laid off of my job. Thank you, God. I got laid off my job, and, you know, God, you know, this guy I was working for was arrogant, egotistical, I mean, just a spoiled, narcissistic brat, okay? Just telling you the truth, okay? My wife's smiling because she knows I'm telling the truth. And so he laid me off, and I'm so happy because you hear this a lot in meetings. You hear it an awful lot. God don't close one door unless he opens two more. And in less than a month and a week, I was working, you know, this isn't to brag, I'm just telling you, I ended up finding a job in Visalia for Lycon, which is building aircraft motors. And it's my forte, that's what I love doing. Well, I happened to go see this guy, and he said, yeah, Dennis, he said, yeah, come to work. You know, so that closed that door for him, but I didn't know it at the time. So now my oldest son calls me, and he's drank himself almost into a wet brain, you guys. And when I was talking to him that night, it sounded like, you know, I told my wife, I've never heard him sound that delusional, that neurotic ever in my life. You know, so I get up, I go out behind the shed, and I hadn't been smoking, and I'm back there just hot, boxing a cigarette. And all of a sudden, I look around, and I see the oldest Cocker Spaniel we have, Dolly's there, and I go, God, I go, I'm busted, man. Dolly's standing there. My wife's standing there. So I look up, and she says, well, what are you doing, Dennis? Now, listen to this. Listen to this insanity. Now, I almost got 16 years clean. Listen to this insanity. I tell her, oh, I'm looking for some wood. I said, it's raining, and the wood pile's over here in the front. There's no wood back there. Uninvitedly, where this shit come from, I don't know. I tell her I'm looking for some wood. So she don't say too much more. We get in the house, and she goes, were you smoking? I said, No, I wasn't smoking. Now, you guys, listen. I'll be honest here. You know, why? You go, why? You ask an alcoholic why, you get 1,000 ideas. She asked me, why are you lying? And she said, what makes you lie? I might have told her the truth, but when she said why, my head just goes, whew. You know, I'm not lying. And finally, I thought about it, and I go, yeah, I was smoking. Next thing I know, she comes and she grabs the phone. I don't see her for a week, 2 weeks. She's pissed, and I don't blame her, honestly. I mean, I'm not telling you this for any reason but recovery purposes, okay, of what we go through, the insanity I go through. I don't want to hurt her. She's the last person in the world I want to hurt. Why would I want to lie when I'm stone cold busted? I mean, come on. All it's going to do is add fuel to the fire. But uninvitedly, that's what I did. So, you know, what I'm trying to tell you, and I'm trying to, my message is to you, is if you're not working the steps, if you're not going to continuous meetings, if you're not, let me put it this way, not working the steps, experiencing the steps. There's a big difference. I hate that word work. I'd rather feel the experience I get from it. And going to meetings, working with a sponsor, networking with a fellowship, doing anything you can to enhance your recovery, that's going to happen to you. That will happen to you. Shit will go away. Shit stands for sharing how I think. And I'm full of it, you guys. I'm not saying that to be funny. I know it's funny, but it is. It's sharing how I think. That's what shit stands for. So, what I'm trying to say here is I know that I will be invested the rest of my life in recovery. I've tried getting Dick Lily White at least 4 times that I know of. It didn't work. Okay, it worked for a little while, and then back out there again. The only thing that's ever worked for me has been recovery. It keeps me pretty much thinking honest all the time. It tells me when I get off of that and get on some other thought process and I get impulsive or I get full of anxiety or I get nervous. All I'm just doing is distancing myself from my God. And like I say, that's why I'm going to go back to the divine intervention. Those are spiritual roadblocks to me. You know, and I don't like them. They're not fun. I can't describe the feeling it put me through for the month that happened between me and her. I can't describe it. I didn't eat. I didn't sleep. The knot in my stomach kept getting tighter. And the alcoholic part of it says, Dennis, it ain't that big a thing. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat it. You know? It is that big a thing, you guys. To me. Because that is a red flag. And that red flag will lead to relapse. You know, they talk about spiritual principles in each step. A lot of people call the steps guidelines to living. I call them guidelines to freedom. And they have freed me, you know. When I don't use them, when I don't apply them, those spiritual principles aren't there anymore. It's just like I'm a dry drunk. I don't like that shit. There's word sharing how I think. And that's what happens. I start thinking crazy stuff. You know, I just can't tell you enough how to feel enough, how happy I am for him to invite me here. It's really an honor to be speaking up here in front of a bunch of people here that I don't know. There's a lot of people here that I do know. My life has been led to, I get to work with youths, and most of those youths have got into gangs. In one way or the other, have all got into drugs, and they're all younger than 18 years old, and I've had the opportunity, and God's given me the opportunity to be able to work with them. And I've got to see a lot of spiritual paychecks as a result of that. And the Big Book talks a lot about, you know, we can only keep what we got by giving it away. And, you know, that's what Bill, you know, did for me. He gave it away to ask me to come and speak. And when I started to leave work tonight, I get all the way to Mooney, and man, there must have been one hell of a huge accident, because it was stopped. Traffic stopped. As far as I could see, there was cars. So it took me 15 minutes to get to an off ramp. I called my wife and told her, I said, man, there's no way I'm going to be able to go home, shower, make this meeting and come back. And she says, well, Dennis, I'll bring you the clothes. You know, and so that's what we did. And it's no big deal. It's no big deal to be able to get up here and give the message of recovery away. You know, that's a big deal to me. You know, that's why I, you know, think of everybody sitting here as family. You know, you got the same last name I got. You know, you go through the same processes of the insanity of this disease as I do. You've had, you know, some people get pulled in here by their earlobe from mom. Some people have to go do prison time. It doesn't matter how you get here, okay? That's doesn't matter to us how you get here. What matters is that you're here. And that we're going to try to keep you here with everything we can to keep you here. And we usually try to do it with love. And one of the reasons I got into recovery is you guys displayed a higher capacity to love, which I never had in my life. I didn't have that. My father was an alcoholic. Something scared me when I was young. Okay, I can't put my finger on it, you guys. I don't know what it was. I was scared to tell anybody that I was scared because they would then think I was a coward. And I would rather die, honestly, than somebody call me a coward. So that's why I love AA so much, because I can get up here in front of all of you and tell you, I'm scared yet. I really am scared. I really do have a lot of fears. You know, there are a lot of things that I go through that I can disclose to you guys, and you'll go, you know, yeah, I go through the same things. Now, we can't go do that to other people because they would say, well, you need medication. You need to be locked up. I mean, to me, this is a miracle to be standing up here at this podium and giving this away. I would have never dreamed 15 years ago that I would have been befriended by two judges. I would have never dreamed that. Actually flew all the way back east to a drug court seminar with one of them. If you would have told me that 15, 16 years ago, I would have told you, you have lost your mind. But that's not the way it is, you guys. So it's almost 5 days, so I'm going to thank everybody, you know, and Bill for asking me to come and speak. It's been an honor, and thank you.